From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of February 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield, where the Illinois Performance Tested Bullsdale took place earlier today. We'll talk about that in just a bit. We'll also catch up on what's happening in the marketplace. Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas will join us to discuss what happened in Chicago and Washington, D.C. Along the way, speaking of Washington, D.C., we'll hear a feature story that Morning Edition aired on NPR today as it relates to Robert Lighthizer. He's the U.S. Trade Representative negotiating with China. It's a really good look at where Lighthizer comes from and what we can expect from him at the table with China. And that'll all happen right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do buy those tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. It's coming up on Tuesday, the 5th day of March. Boy, that's really close now. If you've not gotten your tickets, buy them today. WILLAG.org or 800-898-1065 for that $30. And it's just $30. A dozen analysts will be there, and we'll talk about the weather with Eric Snodgrass and Murray Wise. We'll discuss what's up with the value of farmland. You can do it right now, again, online, willag.org or 800-898-1065. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture kicked off its 95th annual Agricultural Outlook Forum in Washington, D.C., and while more numbers will come out tomorrow to flesh out some of what was released by the chief economist, Robert Johansson, earlier today, they are predicting at this point, and these projections will change as we get to March 29th and the acreage report, but at this point that USDA says corn plantings will be 92 million acres. That versus 89.1 last year. They're projecting soybean plantings at 85 million acres versus 89.2 last year. And they say the wheat plantings at 47 million acres are down just slightly from the 47.8 million that were planted last year. USDA is projecting the season's average price for wheat at $5.20 a bushel, for soybeans at $8.80, and for corn at $3.65 a bushel. Those numbers are all for the season that is upcoming, or the crop that will be put in the ground, the 2019-2020 season. Now, in Washington, D.C., they reacted, I suppose, rather in Chicago, they reacted, I suppose, some to that, but more importantly, to some information that's been trickling out about the trade negotiations with China and the expectation of an offer on the agricultural part of the MOUs, the Memorandums of Understanding, and there are five of them apparently that they're working on, this one related to agriculture. And China has made an offer to buy $30 billion more agricultural products from the United States than they did in 2018, the calendar year. That number was down sharply, but it was still at $16 billion, so that puts it at $46 billion, and that's well above around the $24, $25 billion that happened in 2017. Here to talk about all of these numbers and what it's been meaning to Chicago is Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Thanks for waiting patiently, Dan. A lot of numbers to go through before we got to you today. Hey, giddy up. Things are on the upside in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon.
Well, if all of the leaks are true and they go ahead and get approved, I guess you and I talked a little bit about that. This all has to be approved by Congress, and it all takes time. But if that is true, I think that's very huge on the demand side for both corn and soybeans. And that's why you got the market responding to the upside like you do today. Now, technically, if we hold today's advances and then maybe we could build on them on into tomorrow, we're going to close the market higher for the week. And I think that would set in place kind of a winter cycle low, which is somewhat normal. You and I have been talking about a February break here for the last 2 or 3 weeks, that the markets are usually seasonally vulnerable to a break in February. And we did get that break going into the middle part of the month. And now we're trying to use the last 10 days of the month, or the last 8 days, I guess, since February is a short month, to recover from some of those losses. And if we do, we may end up closing the month out unchanged, but in the near term here, I think this higher weekly finish, if we get one tomorrow afternoon, is big. Now, cyclically, I think corn has more upside lift to it, at least going into April, than soybeans. I think soybeans might take a back seat to corn, and that kind of tells me that maybe you know, this late spring, cold spring, low sunspot activity, I think it's going to keep the spring awful cold. So I think we might get into talk of, we might start building a weather premium into the corn market as we go into March or so. I don't think we're going to build it in this week, but I think once you get into middle March, we could start building a premium into the corn market if it doesn't look like we're going to get out into the field very quickly, especially those in the northern third of the growing region, because it could be, you know, they could get into some real serious delays. And that could change the acreage mix significantly as we go down the road.
As you mentioned, the acreage mix can change. USDA's numbers, of course, are projections. However, they are in the midst, probably right now, of getting ready to send out a survey, I think, to about 80,000 producers across the United States. This is the largest survey they do of the year, to get an idea of what the acreage mix will look like. And those numbers, based on what farmers are saying, will be released on the 29th of March. I want to come back to the technical side of the picture. And just a reminder that I'm here in Springfield, so if you hear the cattle lowing in the background, that's because I'm at a bull sale, the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, that should have wrapped up earlier in the day. However, coming back to that technical side, you were worried when we began the month that it was setting up for potentially an outside down month. We have a lift in the market today. How worried are you that this could turn around?
Well, I think there's a good shot at it. I think, I mean, like I said, middle February is not uncommon if you go back in the old days and look at price weakness during February into early March. It's very common. Like I said, during the double O's, when we were needing acres for the ethanol expansion, February was more of a seasonal up month. But I think since we've got plenty of supply now, I think the tendency to go back to a more seasonality of having weakness in February may be part of it. Well, we still have a ways to go to get back to those late January highs. But at least if we can follow through, if we can hold today's gains into the close, then we're starting off Friday higher for the week. And if we could see some technical follow through, that would really lay out some pretty good technical price action that would encourage more short covering as we go into the last week of the month of February. And I think just the fact that we were able to bounce off of our winter lows so nicely, and even if we maybe close lower for the month by a few pennies, I still think that would be positive enough price action to say that the month of April then, or the month of March, is set up to be a higher month. And then that'll all begin. Then we begin to bring in weather. And then, of course, we got the all-important BIC report coming at us on March 31st that could throw everybody a curveball. But I can't be super bullish, but I think what I see here, yes, this week anyway, and the way it looks like we're going to close out the market, you have to at least have a positive attitude that some of this recovery may take place. Now, if you look at the cash chart, Central Illinois cash chart, soybeans have only been able to kind of come back around 38-40% of the decline that we saw off of last summer's highs down to the late summer low. So we're hanging around this 40% area. If we really need to kind of bust above this area to really dress up the soybean chart for a big move. However, corn is on the other hand, corn is above the 50% retracement level. So that is really, I think, telling us that corn has more upside momentum as we go forward. And just glancing at the chart, there's maybe a 50-cent rally in corn. That would be big, that would be huge, and that would be definitely an opportunity to take advantage of.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Well, up next, as I was traveling to Springfield earlier today, I was listening to NPR and heard a profile of our U.S. trade representative that's negotiating with China. I called NPR and asked if it would be okay if we used it during the closing market report this afternoon. They agreed. This profile of Robert Lighthizer is put together by Jim Zeroli. Lighthizer, of course, is a lawyer and has more than four decades of experience in Washington trade battles. He grew up in a steelport town on Lake Erie, and it is that experience that apparently turned him into a major skeptic of free trade.
Last October, President Trump unveiled a trade agreement with Mexico and Canada. It had taken months to negotiate. And as he did, he turned to shake hands with a tall, unassuming man who stood behind him holding a folder filled with papers.
No matter when you called him, he was in the office or he was in somebody else's office doing the same thing. Hey, Bob Lighthizer is great. I've heard it for years. I said, if I ever do this, I want to get Lighthizer to represent us because he felt the way I did.
With Robert Lighthizer, Trump has a trade representative who very much shares his hardball views on trade, if not his pugnacious style. Take China, for instance. Way back in the 90s, Lighthizer was warning that China was no ordinary market economy. It didn't play by the rules. If American markets were open to Chinese imports, he said, no U.S. factory job would be safe. And Lighthizer's views on China haven't changed over the years. Here's a speech from 2017.
The sheer scale of their coordinated efforts to develop their economy, to subsidize, to create national champions, and to distort markets is a threat to the world trading system that is unprecedented.
And Lighthizer has been a big critic of trade deals like NAFTA. He warned that they would devastate American manufacturing. In Washington, where one administration after another preached the gospel of free trade, Lighthizer's views placed him outside the mainstream for a long time, says Edward Alden of the Council on Foreign Relations.
The view in Washington has been that opening up trade is good for the United States and good for the other countries involved. Lighthizer is a professed economic nationalist. He's very much about what's in it for the United States.
But Lighthizer is well-respected even by those he's clashed with, such as former U.S. Trade Representative Mickey Cantor, who helped negotiate NAFTA for the Clinton administration. Cantor says he's often been at odds with Lighthizer, but he concedes that Lighthizer has a deep understanding of trade law.
Well, he's bright, he's experienced, he's confident. He is certainly understands these issues backwards and forwards.
But Lighthizer also has fans in some even more unusual places. He's well-respected by unions and by people on the left, such as Lori Wallach, a leading opponent of trade deals.
Bob Lighthizer is kind of like the unicorn USTR. It's like a mythical beast who actually, by merit of his past work, has relationships with Democrats in Congress and with unions and has relationships with businesses and with Republicans.
Wallach, founder of Global Trade Watch, remembers listening to Lighthizer speak out against NAFTA in the 90s. She was surprised at her own reaction.
Which was, that's kind of scary, that right-wing Reagan administration Republican trade guy is saying things that I 70% agree with.
Since then, they've often worked together in trade battles, and they talk regularly. Lighthizer's skepticism about free trade was shaped in part by his background. He grew up in relative comfort in the Ohio city of Ashtabula. Mark Plagakis worked with him at a summer job in a grocery store.
He was a good kid, handsome, well-spoken. His dad was a doctor, which in Ashtabula at that time was, you know, elite social status.
The Ashtabula of Lighthizer's childhood was a thriving port town. It shipped in iron ore for steel mills and shipped out coal from Kentucky and West Virginia. But much of that is gone today. Former union official Ray Gruber drove me around town on a cold, overcast day, past empty storefronts and faded frame houses. These days, much less freight comes through Ashtabula's port, and many of its manufacturers have fled.
The big plants have all moved out, and that happened late 70s, early 80s. I think there was a lot of shock and awe, because now all of a sudden you got 1,000 people who are looking for work.
Those who know him say Lighthizer brings up Ashtabula's decline in conversation and that it's affected his views on trade. Leo Girard is president of the United Steelworkers.
I grew up in a working class town, and he knows how people have suffered by losing jobs, and I suspect that that's part of why he went into that part of the legal profession.
As a lawyer, Lighthizer represented the steel industry in Washington. He also worked on trade policy in the Reagan administration. At the time, his target was Japan, which was seen as a big threat to American manufacturing jobs. Lighthizer helped push Tokyo to accept limits on how much it exported to the U.S., says Edward Alden.
I think the Japan experience told him the only way you make progress is through threats that you're prepared to carry out to restrict access to the world's largest market, which is the United States.
Now, Lighthizer is trying to make the same threats against China. He sees China as an even more formidable adversary than Japan. Its markets remain largely closed to outsiders, he says. Intellectual property theft is a huge problem. Here's what Lighthizer said in 2017.
Expect change, expect new approaches, and expect action.
Now, as the country's chief negotiator on trade, Lighthizer is in a position to do something about it. And those who know him say Lighthizer, at 71, views this as his last best chance to reverse the decline of cities such as Ashtabula, the town he grew up in. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
Our thanks go to Jim Zaroli and NPR for letting us use their profile of U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer.
Thank you both.
Well, I'm here at the Illinois State Fairgrounds for the annual Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. Travis Mateer joins us. He's a beef extension specialist and organizes the sale, has all the numbers as they finished up for the afternoon. How many bulls did you sell, and what kinds of averages did we have?
Yeah, Todd, we had a nice sale. It continues to show why we have the strict standards we do and the value that comes with buying bulls from the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. Today, we sold 48 bulls that averaged $37.53 on those 48 for a gross of $180,150. So again, thanks to the bidders and buyers and the consigners on a successful sale.
Do you have any other stats about the ranges and the bulls?
Yeah, so we have different divisions. It's a multi-breed sale, so we have our Angus bulls, our Hereford bulls, and our Simmental bulls. Our older Angus bulls averaged 37.20. The yearling Angus bulls were 38.79 on 12 bulls. Our Hereford senior bulls at 28.56, and then our Simmental seniors, our older Simmental bulls, were 46.89, the popular division in this year's sale. And then our Simmental yearling bulls, we had 8 of those, averaged 35.63.
Hey, thanks so much, and congratulations on a successful sale.
Thank you, Todd.
Travis Mateer is with University of Illinois Extension. He organizes the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. I was there this morning at that sale in Springfield on the Illinois State Fairgrounds. You can join me in just about a week and a half now over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the All-Day Ag Outlook. We'll have a dozen grain analysts there for the day. We'll talk about the commodity markets, what happened in Chicago, actually today, and whether we've got more MOUs news from China. We'll discuss the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass will be there. Murray Wise will be there as well to take a look at land values. Cost is just $30. That includes the Beef House roll and coffee in the morning, your lunch at the noon hour, and you can buy those tickets online at willag.org.